In a world that can be challenging, and at times unpredictable, it's hard to find moments to focus on what you need. Join Stephanie James on The Spark as she guides you to use your inner flame to ignite your best life. As a best-selling author, psychotherapist, transformational life coach, and international show host, Stephanie is dedicated to helping you create a life that takes you, your goals, and your passions to the next level, so you can live a life that is fully lit up and fully alive. She believes that your life is meant to be a beautiful expression of the things that light you up. That by living your dreams, you give permission to others to do the same. Are you ready to feel alive and inspired to fuel your dreams and put a fire behind your desires? Let's ignite a spark in one another that will illuminate the world. The Spark, with your host, Stephanie James, starts now.
Welcome to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. I hope that your holidays were absolutely wonderful. We still have one up ahead with New Year's Eve, but I hope that this Christmas season for you has been one of just really connecting with people that you love, opening your heart, and finding that peace that really resides inside of you. So I'm hoping that you've taken some of that time during this holiday to really find those moments for yourself where connection is what you are focused on and love is what you're experiencing. I have a really special guest with me tonight, author Gabrielle Myers, and we're going to be talking about her new book, Too Many Seeds. She's an amazing poet and writer. Can't wait to share it with you. Welcome to the show, Gabrielle.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Well, and I know you're coming to us from Sacramento, not very snowy Christmas time.
No, it's been pretty warm here. We've had temperatures in the 70s, from 70 to 75. My tomatoes have flowers on them. They're actually forming peppers, you know, the pepper plants. So it's been pretty unseasonably warm. Normally it's not that warm here.
Yeah, but how great. I love that. I'm very envious and being able, you were sharing, like, to walk on the beach and go do some wonderful things like that. How wonderful. So we're going to talk about your book, but I also want the audience to have a chance to get to know you, the person. So can you talk a little bit about your roots? You had shared before we got on the show that you used to live on the East Coast.
Yes, I grew up in a town called Rockville, Maryland, which was a suburb of DC, and I spent the first 18 years of my life there. Had a wonderful time exploring. It was suburbia, but we had a nice backyard that ended in a creek, so I had fun exploring that area. You know, grew up around some wonderful people. DC is a really vibrant place where people from all different nations come to live. So I learned a lot about different cultures. You know, was exposed to museums when I was young, had fun hanging out at the National Zoo. So it was a good place to grow up. But when I was about 18, I went off to college in Massachusetts. And then as soon as I could, I exited that cold environment and came out to warm California when I was about 22 or 23 and have been here pretty much ever since. So I really enjoy California because of the beautiful weather, the beaches, the mountains, the great food too. We can basically grow anything here. So I really enjoy that aspect of it. I love to garden. I love food and I love cooking with fresh produce. And so this is a wonderful place if you're interested in that type of life.
Yeah. So beautiful. And yay. I mean, I'm with you. I love warmer weather, even though I'm here in Colorado. And we're having an unseasonably warm weather as well. But I lived in LA for a year. So I know, you know, that area. I absolutely love it. So I'm curious, what started you writing poetry? Were you one of these kiddos that wrote poems or wrote short stories, or how did you even get interested in poetry?
I was. When I was, I think, eighth grade, we had a project, and our project was to basically work on a group of poems. And I remember looking out the classroom window, they had this roof, and students, of course, we weren't that well-behaved. People would throw soda bottles and chip bags and so forth on this roof. And I remember writing a poem about that. And so since I was younger, I'd always had this connection to poetry. I loved reading and writing. For me, I really struggled when I was younger because I had dyslexia. So I didn't learn how to read until the end of first grade. And it was a real struggle for me to learn how to read. I was able to learn how to read because my father, who also has dyslexia, yet is the best reader I've ever met, taught me to read how he reads. And so for me, writing and reading has always been a challenge, yet has always held so much joy and exploration. I love how on a page you can consolidate a moment or an instance or an emotion in such a powerful, compact way that can touch people and take you into your head and your experiences in a way that nothing else can. And so I fell in love with that idea in eighth grade. And since then, I've been working in autobiographical essays and stories and also writing poetry pretty extensively. I took a break to cook in restaurants for many years, but I always knew I was going to come back to writing in my heart. And eventually I did make my way back.
Well, and is this your first book? Is Too Many Seeds your first book, or have you had many books?
Well, this is my second book. So my first book is a memoir called Hive Mind, and it was published in 2015. And in that, I write about my experiences on an organic farm in Vacaville, California, which is on the edge of the valley here in California. And my experiences there were very complicated. In many ways, for me, it was a coming into a love with life and returning to what initially drew me to bliss in regards to cooking and existence, really, was working in the garden when I was younger, and it kind of brought that back for me. But it was also tainted with a very tragic event that happened on that farm that you have to buy the book to find out more about.
Yeah,
that. So it's a memoir. It's a memoir, but it's sprinkled with poetry. And a lot of those poems are, they directly respond to the sections that are more prose-like. And then also Too Many Seeds is my second book, but some of the poems in Too Many Seeds are about that same time on that organic farm and what happened. So the two texts call back and forth to each other.
Oh, beautiful. Love that. Yeah. So it sounds like part of what happened on this farm for you was also just kind of an awakening.
It was. Yes. I had worked in restaurants for about, I think it was 7.5 to 8 years. And I had lost my passion for life. You know, restaurant work is so wonderful in many ways. I met some of the best friends that I've ever had in my life, working side by side them on the line under high pressure conditions. But I was living in the Bay Area. I was earning pretty low wages, didn't have benefits. It was a very challenging situation. Often you're exhausted from the work. And I kind of lost my passion for life and passion for cooking, which is something that I always loved. And I'm the kind of person where I lose my passion, I know something needs to change, because you should always be passionate about life. Life is too short to not live it up and feel like really ecstatic and, you know, in bliss with it. And so I needed to shake something up. And so I went to the farm really to shake that up and to fall back in love with vegetables and life, I think, in many ways too. And I did when I was on that farm, despite what happened. For me, it was a really returning and coming into a new awareness, a new state of being, really in many ways coming into adulthood. Because when you enter into adulthood, you know, in its true level, I think you lose some of your innocence, but you also regain some of it. And you can return to really the grounding and the roots that you felt when you were a six-year-old running through the forest, or, you know, ripping out a garlic plant from your parents' garden and smelling the earth and smelling kind of that majesty that the earth can provide for us.
Yeah. I mean, that deep connection to nature that I'm hearing, like, at that farm, obviously, you know, it sounds like you really, I mean, literally were in touch with that.
It was a blissful experience for me. We'd get up very early, and I'm not a morning person, so I chug my coffee. I love to sleep till 8, and we would get up at 6 and be out in the fields to beat the heat. So there was that. But when you're forced into, I think, a new environment in many ways, it shakes you up and it allows you to look at things in a new perspective. I'd gone from working what felt like just day after day after day in high intense kitchen environments, very enclosed and surrounded by people, to this wide open space, a 22-acre farm filled with organic vegetables. And when I woke up in the morning, I could hear the peeper frogs calling back and forth. And that in the summer shifted to the crickets calling back and forth. And I was at the edge of a seasonal creek living in a yurt. For me, it was just such a glorious experience. We'd pull onions from the field, and when they were still warm, cook them up. there was that deep touch, you know, that you would get from holding an okra, and it would itch your skin a little bit from the latex that would rub off, but then you slice it really thin and eat it. And it's so fresh. There's nothing like that. And then the smells of the plum blossoms in the air, and you could hear the bees buzzing back and forth, fertilizing everything. So it was or pollinating everything. So it was a very magical and glorious experience in many ways.
Wow.
Blissful, I would say. It's nice to have that experience in life. And I feel like that's something we should never forget and always try to return to as often as we can.
Yeah. So now that you're not living, how long has it been since you've been on the farm?
In 2006. So it's been quite a long time now.
Yeah. So I'm curious then, how do you return to that today? What do you do that gives you that same sense of grounding now?
I'm an avid gardener. So I live in an urban environment in Sacramento, and I grow a lot of plants here in the backyard. I think I have probably 30 pepper and tomato plants. And so I'm very active with that. My boyfriend lives on our ranch about an hour and a half away. And so when I'm there, we plant a lot of things together and cook from the garden and so forth. And so I return to it as much as possible through those modes. But then also I go to the farmers markets and my local food co-op, where they have wonderful produce from ranches and from farms, maybe 15, 20 miles away from here. So that's how I connect with it. Through cooking too, I think, is such a nice way to connect back with the earth, because there's this beautiful exchange, I think, that happens when we grow food and then we cook with it and we nourish ourselves and the people that we love. That transformation, it's really a transformation, I think, of the earth's energy is quite a beautiful, elegant thing to me.
It is, you know, and as you were speaking, I was reminded of, this is a movie from so long ago, like early 90s, but it was that like Water for Chocolate. Do you remember that movie?
Have I
you
heard do.
That
movie?
And where food is just like this amazing, sensual, it's like, it's the transmitter of whatever the emotion is and how it's prepared. And so in that movie as well, everything was hand, you know, it was like from the garden, handmade, you know, into these beautiful broths or dishes. And then it was the emotion that made it was transferred to the people that were eating it.
There is that emotional element that I think gets exchanged through food. Food isn't just food. It's not just like this object. It is something that fills us with energy. I think it contains energy. And then when we prepare it with care and attention, I think it conveys our love towards other people in a way nothing else can.
Yeah. I love this conversation, because it's, you know, sometimes, as we know, anything can be abused, whether it's food or, you know, anything else we put too much emphasis on, if you will. And so if we're consuming too much food, probably not good for us. So this intentional loving, I mean, what a beautiful nurturing thing food can be.
It can be. It can heal, obviously, through health reasons, or in what it's worth, in healthy ways, but it can also, I think, heal us emotionally as well.
Yeah. So before we get to, you know, when we go to break, we're going to take a little break and come back. And I'm hoping that maybe you'll do some reading for us to share.
I would be happy to.
Share a little bit of this wonderful new poem book, Too Many Seeds. But before that, let's talk a little bit about how did you come up with, because it's really this blend in the book about nature and food. And obviously it's been a big part of your life, and now knowing the backstory a little bit, I'm understanding that, but how has that been, this passion for you?
It's always been a passion for me since I was a little girl. So my parents, they worked a lot of hours. They were workaholics, but there was always time when we were younger, usually on the weekends, in which we'd spend hours and hours in the garden, planting cabbage, planting corn, cultivating the small area in our suburban backyard, using compost and so forth. And so for me, there's always been that strong connection that I've had, I guess, back to a fond childhood memory that keeps pulling me back. It's interesting how things like that happen. My dad's parents as well were avid gardeners. They had this huge flower garden on a hillside in Pennsylvania, and they would always get so excited every spring and talk about what they're going to plant. And it was like this big conversation that the family would have. I remember they grew these golden raspberries that were so sweet, yet had this little tinge of acidity that was just so delicious. And they would ask us, one of the first things we always did when we visited Grandma and Grandpa Myers was to go down and pick strawberries or raspberries that we could have with dinner. And so I have that fond memory, I think, back to those early childhood experiences that kind of keep pulling me back in. And I keep, I guess, seeking that that exposure in my life, in that special connection.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of this natural emerging, if you will, from that which has always lit you up and made your senses come more alive.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It does make my senses come more alive. I feel like there's a sudden opening and awareness when I'm out in the garden working, or when I start to play with a vegetable in the kitchen, perhaps, and see how it can reveal itself to me in terms of the palate. And so this, widening of barriers happens, and it feels like suddenly there is no distance between me and what I see or what I touch out in the world. So.
Well, and I love the piece too, that I'm envisioning as you're speaking. It's like, there's this timeless element where it brings you right into the present moment.
Yes. It's very much, in the here and now. I don't think you can be any more, well, I guess you can be in other ways, but it's a powerful way of being in the here and now. I think when you're out there in the garden or in a field or just walking in nature and you have that connection. Also, when you're working with materials in the kitchen, vegetables or fruit and so forth, there's that, the distance is gone and you're really in that present moment and grounded, I think, in a way that is so healthy, because you're not thinking of this and that. You're really thinking about, okay, what am I going to eat, or what can I touch and feel and smell?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's spectacular. That is that piece for us that, my God, if we could practice that more in our lives right now, if everyone could, I'm just like blown away with the potential of, and it is, it draws you into the sensory experience. And if we allow ourselves to be in the present moment, what we know is that literally our body comes into alignment. Mm-hmm. You know, our breath slows down. We begin to relax. And, you know, Mother Earth is so good to us, and it absorbs all these negative ions from us. And we truly start to have a different experience as we emerge ourselves in it.
Definitely. It's almost a way of meditating. It really is a form of meditation, I think. But rather than close your eyes and focus on your breath, you're focusing on physicality in a new way that is much more kind of tangible, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, beautiful. It's an awake and an awakened meditation. I love that, interacting with nature. So we need to go on break right now. But excited for you to come on back after this and join Gabrielle Myers and I as we talk more about too many seeds. Come on back.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
Are you curious about who the Holy Spirit is, or whether or not the Holy Spirit is real, and even more so, how to connect with an invisible God on a deeper level? Join me, Dr. Lisa Kohut, on Making the Holy Spirit Famous every second and fourth Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Central Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com to begin that relationship, to begin to deepen your relationship with the Holy Spirit. To work with me, go to HolySpiritCoach.com. See you soon.
On the Spiritual Freedom Show, you will hear the voice of an extraterrestrial master speaking through my teacher, Dr. George King, as it was recorded over 60 years ago. I'm Richard Lawrence, and on this podcast, I bring you the 9 freedoms, which I believe to be the greatest wisdom on earth, with practical ways to give global service and attain enlightenment.
Do you feel like you and your significant other have lost their initial spark? Then let Coach Martez and Wadrina guide you to strengthen your love and reignite that spark on the Coach Martez and Wadrina Layton Show on Transformation Talk Radio. Understanding love, accepting truth, and changing perspective. For more information, make sure you go to dreambuilderscoaching.net. That is dreambuilderscoaching.net.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm your host, Stephanie James. If you want to find out things that are going on, events that you can be a part of, retreats that I'm giving, or events that I'm putting on, please go to my website, stephaniejames.world. And while you're there, you can get a free exploratory call with me for 20 minutes. Just sign up for that. And please take advantage of, there's a free gift, which is a visualization, which is igniting the sparks within. So you can sign up for that as well. I'm just so happy to serve you in any way that I can to help you ignite your best life. So I'm back here in conversation with Gabrielle Myers, and we've just been having such a cool conversation, really, about things that are essential for our well-being. As we're talking about nature, we're talking about the things that really matter, things that really help not just feed us nutritionally, but feed our soul as we're in touch with nature and food. So Gabrielle, I asked her if she'd be willing to share with us a few of her poems from this beautiful book, Too Many Seeds. So Gabrielle has agreed to share a few of her just beautiful poems with us. So let us know, Gabrielle. Yeah, what did you want to share?
So I'd love to start by sharing a poem called Ayako Ino's Pa'am Tomaket. Ayako is a dear friend of mine that I've known for about 20 years, maybe a little longer. We cooked side by side in intense restaurant environments and also spent time walking and cooking in a casual way together. And she's a wonderful chef, the best chef I've ever met. And so this is a poem I wrote many years ago about Ayako's work. It was specifically inspired by when we worked a lunch shift together in June at Bolette's Larder in San Francisco's Plaza, Ferry Plaza building. There knows, smell Ayako's meal. There is afternoon, late August. There is golden light that makes violet eggplants expand, sends sugar into gypsy peppers. There fog helps black plum tomatoes dig for water, coaxes them into pressurized drops of flavor. There is salt sea, sardines swimming, opalescent crisp skin, briny flesh held in hand, how it gives into her finger. There, kelp, plankton, and sunlight through water. There, her abandoned farm by the Sea of Japan, pickled squid, ume plums packed in salt. A snapshot of her ex-husband and his young new wife at the barn of a door. There, this year's first plum blossom, a raindrop slipped from petal. Haven't you dreamt you were in a plum orchard, bare branches set to burst white? Haven't you wondered about blossoming rose, bees humming when leaves fall and curl in the dry season? There knows, smell the basil she pinched from the garden plot in Oakland. Smell her and her new husband working in the afternoon sun last March. Sweat-logged t-shirts, compost from the kitchen, orange peels resisting decay. There, the fennel bulb she taught you to slice thin so its fingers bend like a Buddha's hand. There knows, a fermenting tomato left to rot beside a desiccating vine. Seeds meant to tumble in the soil, root next year. Here, Ayako peers into a vat black with hot oil. She turns, snapping squash blossoms with a slotted spoon. Here mouth, peppers caramelized in olive oil. Here mouth, tomatoes slow dried in a small oven. Here mouth, sardines still moist, barely set, pulled from thin bones.
Love that. Love that. I was just following my senses to just have this experience with you as you were reading that. When you had that experience with her, and it's been a long time now, did you write some of this down then?
So this poem I actually wrote way back, I think it was summer of 2007. So quite a long time ago. She's still a good friend of mine. I saw her, I think, maybe a month and a half ago. So we still communicate, you know, and talk on the phone quite often. But this was written a long time ago. So we were working at Isabulat's Larder in the Ferry Plaza building in San Francisco, which is right on the edge of the water. And we just gotten sardines in from the fishmonger. And then also these wonderful tomatoes, these heirloom tomatoes. Got a flat of them straight from the farmer. Isabulat's Larder, back then, and it still does it today, they really get farm fresh produce. So it's a true farm to table restaurant. They build everything from scratch. And so Ayako, we were working together there, and I just observed her care and her love. She really is the essence to me of somebody that communicates her love and her communicates nourishment to others through her food. That connection is like how she, there are words for her, I think, her dishes. So
yeah. And you so beautifully took us there. And I guess that's what I wondered about. I'm like, how could you recapture that moment all these years later? And, you know, I'm like, you must have taken incredible notes at that time. What a great experience. And I love that, you know, these moments really touched you. You know, touched you enough that, you know, something then was born inside of you that put it into this beautiful form.
Yeah, food touches me. I get really fired up about it, especially when people put care into their work. I mean, there's such a stark difference, I think, between something that's slammed out, you know, and you get at some restaurant to go and it doesn't really taste that good versus something that is phenomenal and really wakes you up and brings you into life in all of its glory. So.
Yeah. Well, and before we go on to your next poem, I'm curious what you've been doing since you left the restaurant.
Oh gosh, life has taken me on quite a journey. So I stopped working in restaurants back in 2006. And then I worked on the organic farm. And then I went to graduate school for my master's and for my MFA. And while I was doing that, I worked in catering. I started teaching on the side through these programs that I received my degrees through. But then I was catering weekends and on Fridays and working my booty off to try to make a living in Bay Area catering companies. And I also worked in the Napa Valley. So all told, I did about 14 years in the restaurant and catering industry. The last 7 years, though, I was also building up my teaching career and teaching any courses I could get at any community college or a four-year school. So ended up working at UC Davis when I was in graduate school, teaching courses there. Went to St. Mary's College of California, where I got my MFA and then stayed on teaching there as a part-timer, teaching there. They have a seminar program, like a great books program, and also English composition courses. Did that about 5 years while I was teaching at all these different community colleges, you know, the classic freeway flyer situation, you know, doing two courses here, an hour away, two courses here, an hour away, often working, gosh, from 7 a.m. to about 9 o'clock at night. And then I finally got a full-time teaching position at San Joaquin Delta College, which is a wonderful community college in Stockton, California, with teachers that really, really care about their students and are gunning for them to succeed. And then students that are really working hard, but often they're first generation college students. So they're learning their way through the college experience and doing wonderful work. Many go on to transfer to UC Berkeley, UCLA, or the CSU in Sacramento. And then some get their certificate and work out in the industry. It's a wonderful school. So I'm very happy to be there. I'm full-time there now, tenured professor of English, which I love.
So. Right on. How exciting. So, I mean, I love seeing this. It's like this multitude of passion that has just kind of driven your life.
Yeah. You know, in some ways I worry sometimes I'm a little too passionate, but that's who I am. I have this drive and I what I love on a deep level. And I try to sustain that every day.
Yeah. I absolutely admire that. You know, I have a book that's going to be coming out this spring called Becoming Fierce, Creating a Bold and Beautiful Life. And it's my second book. And when I hear people speaking about their passion, to me, that really is, that's the definition of fierce. We have a fierce emotion around something. It's not something aggressive. It's something that's ignited and lit up. And so I just see that so lit up in you.
That's such a beautiful way to put it. I love that idea because it takes, you have to be fierce in your pursuit of that passion, I think, in life. You can't be apathetic about it. You have to reach out for it and do work to maintain it.
Well, and then what's so cool and beautiful about what you've done is you've taken that passion and you've extended it to others.
I try. I do my best. I try to ignite my students with that fierce passion, especially for writing and poetry.
Yes. Yeah. And by creating this book, I mean, then you share it with so many people that also then get lit up and can experience it as they're reading it. And so how about let's have you read one more poem. We've got one more after this too, but let's have you share another poem with us now.
This is called The Dried Fruit Factory, Quality Control. This was written about an experience that I had working in a dried fruit factory in Vacaville, California. And the dried fruit factory processed raisins and plums. It was a very intense experience for me because it was a factory environment and it was a very stark contrast to my experience working on an organic farm or in farm-to-table restaurants. This is industrial food ag, big ag as they call it. It was a huge nut and dried fruit corporation. And they had a deal basically with an employment agency who would hire undocumented workers, and that's who they would employ at the factory for extremely low wages. Many of these individuals were working multiple jobs just to make ends meet. There were harsh working conditions. There were exposures to methyl bromide, which hopefully, you know, is going to be phased out completely, but it was often used to fumigate the raisins. So I really connected with the workers in a lot of ways and really admired them. And to me, they're heroes coming to this country and just working so hard and producing our food. I mean, that's love, right? Yet I really was hurt by the fact that they were being exposed to these chemicals and also not being paid, I think, what is a fair wage. And so it led me to write a series of poems called The Dried Fruit Factory Poems. And so this is one called Quality Control. In the factory, men in reflective boots scrub stains from the aster blue floor, lean and twist their bodies to clean underneath lines once linked by uniforms and hairnets. I watch water, bleach clean, raisin tint, iridescent spray. Plum-sized rats sneak through holes in the pipe-busy ceiling, feed on lost fruits. Poisonous vapors pull their oiled bellies from factory bins. Undocumented workers sweat, touch pesticide-gassed fruits through food-safe gloves, inhale I don't know how many parts per million of methyl bromide. Pesticides hold in raisin skin, skin still dusted, milky with natural yeast. 15 flatbeds full of families from Veracruz and Mazatlan, assigned to the plant by an employment agency. Pyramids of dried fruit, divided in boxes by the ounce or pound. Strawberries from China, papaya from Thailand, mangoes from Vietnam, cut combined, sold as mixed fruit, packed in California.
Wow.
That's it.
Wow. Thank you. Oh my goodness. So it's the passion and the pain that's also connected.
Yes, it is. You know, that's the complicated thing about food, I think, is that it takes sometimes pain to put it on our table, which is unfortunate. There's a difference between, I think, hard work, pulling up weeds and so forth versus some of the toxic pesticides that people are exposed to. And, you know, there's this big controversy, and I'm not going to argue that either side is right or wrong, but there's this big controversy in our society that we need to treat food in a certain way and the people that work it in order to mass produce quantities of it to feed everybody, to feed the world, as opposed to a lot of people say organic ag and farm to table work is just not practical to feed so many people. I would argue the truth probably is somewhere in the middle, like it usually is. And maybe there's a medium ground that we can come to where people who are producing our food are treated with respect, dignity, and taken care of. And we're treating the food with dignity as well. Yeah, we can live in abundance and find plenty of food to survive and to thrive.
Yeah, great point. Such a great point. Where, if you are aware of it, where can people find out more information about something like that?
That's a good question. I would say one of the groups that I've come back to, and they were often, this is the first group that would highlight me to things such as some pesticides in my food, the Environmental Working Group. It's a .org, and in .org, I think, you know, information one should always double check for validity, as I tell my students, but I find their work is always pretty valid and credible. And they often highlight information before the national media really covers it. So the environmentalworkinggroup.org is a wonderful site to go to. I think reading and reading actively is always helpful. I think also talking to farmers and talking to the people that are producing our food, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that really resonates with my heart. Both of my sets of grandparents were farmers. So my grandfather on my dad's side, my dad's father, he was a wheat farmer, had 2,000 acres of wheat land in Nebraska. And my other grandma and grandpa, my mother's parents, raised sugar beets and sweet corn and had a dairy farm. So I really, you know, as you're talking about this all, I have incredible memories, and especially of, you know, that sweet corn. Oh my gosh, my brother and I played in those fields for hours. When I smell that, it just takes me back to such an amazing time in my life. So a lot of this really, really does resonate in such a beautiful way. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because it's put me back in touch with some of that I haven't thought of. And I'm hoping, you know, you, the listeners, will also think about those memories within you, you know, the special connections that you've had to the earth and to food and to the purity of food. Because it was very different in those days. When I was growing up than it is now, Lord knows, but we need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Gabrielle Myers more just about her amazing passion in life, philosophies around food and nature and the things that are good for us. And we're also going to hear one more of her poems. So join us again right after this break.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day, and we love to hear from you. Leave comments and questions for the host to address live, on the air, and get to know the faces behind the voices you love. Just go to Facebook and search for Transformation Talk Radio.
Yeah, yippee-skippy to that, baby.
Are you living life, or is life living you? The destination may not be clear when we seek change, but we trust we cannot stay where we are. Healing and transformation coach Trish Campbell strengthens the mind-body-spirit connection. Diane McClade generates positive change by shifting perspective through choice. Get connected and gain clarity on the Shift podcast every first and third Friday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Visit invibe.ca for more info.
The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. If you're like I am, it can be rather elusive to get there. But when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, don't you? And it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of that inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. On the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Join me, Christine Upchurch, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on KKNW AM 1150 and Transformation Talk Radio, and learn new ways to step into your vibration of change.
Introducing The Brilliant Black Man Show with Melissa Johnson. Tune in as Melissa shares the stories of successful black men across the country. This show is designed to change the narrative of how black men are portrayed in the world. The show will highlight their brilliance and how they are making a difference in their family, community, boardroom, and the world. For more information on the show, visit wildministriesllc.com.
Welcome back. I am here with Gabrielle Myers. I'm Stephanie James. Thank you for joining us here on The Spark. We are just so thrilled to be coming into your ears or into your experience every week, and just keep showing up. Subscribe to the show. You can get our podcasts on all platforms, almost all platforms, and check out our YouTube videos so that you don't miss an episode. So sign up, subscribe, and let us help you ignite your best life. Today, we're having an awesome conversation with Gabrielle Myers. We're talking about her book, Too Many Seeds, and this lifetime love affair that she has had with food and nature. So before I have you read this next poem, I'm curious now too, what is it? I mean, obviously I'm hearing the writing and the teaching and still food and nature. What do you find during these times that we've been going through, these really challenging times, what's helped to continue to ground you, and what continues to light you up?
So in addition to working in my garden and spending time with my peppers and my tomatoes that are still growing and the mustard greens that are growing at such a fast clip right now that we've had warm and rainy weather here, I love trail running. So I've been running since I was about 4 or 5 years old. I've run with my dad and my big sister in the suburbs of Rockville, Maryland. And it's something that I came back to when I was about 27, after I had what I call my dark years of smoking cigarettes and engaging in some other negative behaviors. And so I started trail running, and then I started running marathons. And so for me, there's nothing more blissful than spending time out in nature, running, breathing hard, and kind of absorbing the beauty that is around me. I think it's really, for me, it's transformational. I always feel like I'm, how to express it? I'm having an epiphany when I'm running. It gives me time to think and focus. For me, it's similar to walking meditation because it's very physical, but it's pushed to a different level. And so there I feel really connected with what's around me. And I feel this energy exchange in such a powerful way with whether it be the ocean and the beach sand or the leaves, the sycamore leaves falling all around me. It allows me to get away from Gabrielle and what's in here and my life experiences and circumstances and challenges and struggles, and get beyond that to just be a human being out in nature. I was running on the beach the other day, and I ran for about an hour, and it was unusually warm. So it was maybe 70 degrees, and it wasn't that windy, which never happens basically on the Northern California beach. And the waves were crashing, and there were pigeons diving into the surf. And there's just this moment where I felt I entered into another realm, and it was quite a magical, moving experience. And so that really grounds me always. I've come back to that now pretty consistently throughout my life. And if I can't run because I've hurt my knee or my hip, you know, because I'm getting old, I try walking and hiking, and that that does a good job.
Well, I mean, you look so vibrant and, you know, regardless of if you say I'm getting old, I mean, you look so beautiful and so young. And I'm like, that must be one of the keys, you know, I mean, truly plugging into that. I love that it's really taking you to this whole other level of being. That's really powerful.
It's something that I really find great comfort in and joy. And it allows me, I get, you know, like most people, I think everyone gets stuck. We get stuck with a certain way of thinking about ourselves and the world around us. I think running really unsticks me from that, or intense physical exercise really unsticks me from that and kind of breaks me into a new realm.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that with us. So tell me what is the last poem that you have for us? These have just been such a treat, and I love the before stories.
Thank you. So this next one is called Lidded, and this is directly about working on the farm and what I learned. It's pretty abstract what I learned, I would say, and I try to ground it in the imagery of the farm and actually pulling tomatoes from the vine. Really how you, I think, treat the earth, and specifically if you're gardening or you're farming, how you treat the vegetables, you can, I think, treat yourself with that same care. And there's a grounding, I think, that happens when we're doing that type of work that nothing else can really provide for us. And so this poem is really about how working on that organic farm helped me define who I was at that specific point in my life. And I found I moved my way towards wholeness while I was working on that farm because of the tangible work of digging in the fields and pulling down things from the vines like tomatoes. So this is called Lidded. Detail how you call and configure a single self. Tell us how you put yourself in there. Claim speech and hook the lip. Maintain your place by saying what sound you are. Along the highway, wild fennel, ground tender, stiffens in passing car wind. Motion beats it against the guardrail. It gets tougher and bends less. Summer stalks rail hard. The fronds lift up like a frustrated mother's forked palm. In the fields, we picked fragrant tomatoes. Black Cherokee, green zebra, sun gold. Our hands itchy black resin. Fava and peavine greenness merged into tenacious eggplant veins, lengthened a pockmarked tomatillas, little fruit bells sheathed from sun, began to grow, overtake. Rake yourself in like wind pulls dead leaves from open fields.
Beautiful. Wow. So I'm curious for you, as you read this all now, you know, we always talk about like the power in words, you know, and there's beautiful power in this imagery. What does it evoke within you?
It makes me remember how much I enjoyed that feeling of being out in the field, and there's a summer dew surrounding us and the earth warming and the sun moving over our heads. And you can kind of feel that magic of the sun warming your head, whether you have a hat on or not, which I never wore a hat. And also the smells that were around me. And it really takes me back to that time and helps me remember it. And I think in some ways we write poems as gifts to others. That was a common phrase that Paul Celan cast off into the world. But I think we also write poems as notes to ourselves and maybe notes to our future selves. So I think that we're always creating new versions of ourselves, and we're always evolving and changing. At least we should be. And we're always shifting our perspective in life. And so I think it's nice if we send notes to ourselves in 10 or 20 years. Hey, don't forget, you used to love this. This is how you stay in love with life. Go back there every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of, I think it was a Richard Bach book, or I think it was Notes from a Reluctant Messiah, where like he was able to do that, to actually write notes to his, you know, past and future self. As Einstein says, time just bends in on itself. And what a great great just to write these notes that we send forward. I love that imagery. So let me ask you this. So all this stuff that's been coming through you, what are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to ignite in the future as you bring this passion forward?
Oh, so much. I hope to keep writing poetry because it's something that I find really valuable. It's not always easy to get your poetry out there. It's challenging to publish it because not many people buy it. And there are many reasons for that. But I hope to get more of my poetry out there. I have another manuscript called Break Self Feed, which I'm sending out to publishers right now that I wrote over the last 4 or 5 years or so. And so I'd love to see that get out there in the world. I'm continuing my work with, I have a YouTube channel in which I present recipes that are seasonal in their nature, but also dairy and gluten-free. And so hope to keep going with that. I took a little pause during COVID just because I was a little zoomed out with all my classes and so forth, but now I'm getting the energy back. So I'd love to continue with that. I'd love to communicate towards others as much as I can, this ecstasy that they can find in working in the garden or out in nature. And then also the ecstasy that we can find when we cook for ourselves and for others and send that nourishment out. This is something that is such a sacred ritual, I think, that we can do more in terms of cultivating within our culture.
Yeah, love that. You know, and you've definitely inspired me. I'm like, I'm going to go to the grocery store after this, to our like organic grocery store after this and prepare a meal tonight. So love that you're getting your work out there. And where can people find you on YouTube?
So under YouTube, you can just Google my name, Gabrielle Myers, and I have a YouTube channel. The easiest way to find it is basically through my website, which is www.gabriellemyers.com. Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S. And if you go to my website, I have links to the YouTube channel, links to my two books, Too Many Seeds and Hive Mind, links to articles and shorter poems and more.
Yay. Yay. So great. Well, as we're starting to get towards the end of the show, for you, if you had to leave the audience with an essential message, what is it that you'd like them to know?
Write what you need to write from your heart and get it out there. And you can't go wrong with that. Also follow your heart and your passion. I think, you know, in our culture, there's this drive to achieve money and focus on material things and external measures of success. And so sometimes, you know, as a writer or a poet or a farmer or a rancher, people tell you it's not practical and you can't do it because of this or that. Do it because you can do it. People have done it. You just need to be passionate in your pursuit. And sometimes you have to get creative and work 5 or 10 jobs at the same time. But I think if you work hard and you're really passionate about something, nothing really can stop you. And that's a message I think our younger generation really needs to hear, because there is such that drive for the external forms of validation.
So that this becomes something that's truly from the inside out.
It is. I think let that internal compass tell you where to go and then give it the support it needs to flourish and find its true gas to go forward.
Well, it sure sounds like you have found that within yourself. You know, you have this ample supply.
And I just can't help it. I've tried to shove it out. Can you just be a lawyer? But
it's just not. It's great. It's great. Well, and Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your poems and your wisdom and your experience. You know, I want to make sure again that people can find you. So if you'll share again, just the ways that they can find you on YouTube and the ways that they can get your website.
Yeah. So the best way is through the website, which is GabrielleMyers.com. And I'll put that into the chat here. And from there, you can find links to my YouTube channel, my seasonal dairy and gluten-free recipe blog, and my two books as well. In addition to that, links to articles that I have written and poetry that I've published in smaller magazines.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing all of this. And I just can't wait for people to read more and really dive into this book, Too Many Seeds.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank
you. You've ignited my passion.
Woohoo! You've ignited mine. This is like a dual relationship. This is great. Okay. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you, listeners. And just wishing you the most wonderful of New Year's and hoping that you all will dive into a little nature, touch a little food, really ignite these passions within you. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to The Spark with Stephanie James. Remember that you already have what you need to live a life that is fully lit and fully alive. You're already holding the flame. Now it's time to ignite your best life. Learn more at stephaniejames.world. That's stephaniejames.world. And tune in next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, only on transformationtalkradio.com. Shine on!
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.